Today on a special rambling about cars, have you ever detailed a Lamborghini Countach barn find that's been sitting for 20 years? Our special guest has, and so much more. We're going to help you look through all the grind to get down to the beautiful car underneath in this special detail-oriented episode. See what I did there, guys? We're going to have some wild stories to share. So without further ado, it is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. You all know my co-host, Mr. Chris Bruce, and we do have a very, very special guest with us today. I'm excited.
Yep. We have Larry Casillo with us from Ammo NYC. I hope you've checked them out on YouTube or checked him out on YouTube before. His channel, I was looking, your channel is like 9 or 10 years old. So you're a YouTube veteran. You've got over 2 million subscribers on there. You've got a great Instagram. And in addition to detailing cars and really filthy cars, you also detail super expensive cars. Sometimes like the aforementioned Countach, they're both super expensive and super dirty. And then you also have your own line of car cleaning materials, stuff, chemicals, that type of thing. So you are the man when it comes to this stuff. So we're super happy to have you on and super happy to talk about this. And go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure. I've been keeping track of you guys and you're doing some wonderful things. So I'm privileged to be here. So thank you.
No, thank you very much. We are small but proud and growing. I just checked. We're almost to 300 subscribers. Almost. We're two away. It's not quite the level that you're used to, Larry, but we do actually get quite a bit of traction, quite a bit of viewership just going through MotorOne.com. And it's detailing. Come on, people. Anybody who loves cars, you're going out there, you're washing your car, you're polishing your car. Of course, you want to have some tips to do it better. But really, Larry, you're kind of on like another level completely. It's one thing to shine up your car, but I mean, pretty much every one of your videos, it's like something that's been sitting for 10 years, 20 years. I mean, let me just start from the beginning. How did you get into this?
I've been doing it obviously a super long time, but the story goes that my mom saw me outside with the little play car, that kind of thing. I have a picture of it, believe it or not. My mom took a picture that I just started washing it. And it was one of the pedal things back in the day in the early 80s, et cetera. And I got a soap bucket and she was telling me that's all I wanted to do was clean stuff. And she just thought it was interesting slash
odd. A mother's dream.
Yeah, exactly. So I was always pretty clean and fastidious as a young person there. So what I think people find interesting is I've loved cleaning things forever, not necessarily cleaning cars. But as I grew older and realized that the car was a, source of freedom, et cetera, as every, 16, 17 year old, then I kind of joined the two of them, in this, sort of fanaticism, if you will. But the point I'm trying to make is whether it's cleaning the toilet, cleaning my lawn and the leaves and all that kind of stuff. It's just bringing order to something, I think, is where, sort of this, nature comes from. I just have to like constantly do it. And so if you can do it on your car, something that's a piece of work art, makes all the better. Right.
Oh, and it's such a satisfying feeling afterwards.
Right.
And I have to offer some full disclosure to the listeners. I actually got my start in the automotive world as a detailer. I did it for 6 years professionally with a used car dealership. So I think I understand a little bit, Larry, about what you're talking about. I never power washed, 20, Lamborghini Countaches that have been in a barn for 20 years. I did detail a hearse one time that was kind of interesting.
Hopefully it was empty.
it was empty. There was also a Volkswagen van that we've actually talked about previously, Bruce, on this episode, that as we're taking apart the interior, there are some surprising finds that were stuffed into interior components on this older Volkswagen van. So, I mean,
I can only imagine what the lots of stuff. What you could find.
But to give listeners an appreciation of what you're doing, Larry, and for those that aren't following us on YouTube, which you should at Motor One Podcast, so you can see what we're doing. You're in your shop right now. What two cars are behind you?
This one here is my personal car. That's the Taycan Cross Turismo. That's the first one at the time in the country.
Wow.
Pretty cool car. Yeah, I got that obviously direct from Porsche, et cetera, et cetera. And I picked it up in Atlanta. So that one's awesome. And this is just a customer car that came in yesterday that I have to polish. It's brand new. It's got 62 miles. It's a Ferrari Roma, of course.
Wow.
There's just swirls and just normal. Ferrari's kind of known for that when they come out of the factory. They're just not, you know, where they need to be, et cetera. So need to polish that one out, put a clear bra on it. Just kind of a, I don't mean to sound, you know, every week we get the GT3 or Roma or something that, you know, there's just in my area, every, you know, broker from New York City or whatever that gets a bonus. So you get where I'm going with all that. So there's just this inflow of constant new cars. So can't complain. It's great. Interesting. It's not, certainly not the love of my life, to be honest with you. I think it's an interesting design. But for me, I prefer, I know it sounds crazy because I have, you know, basically a computer back there I'm driving, but I still have the 964 and the R8 and, you know, older cars. This one here is so digital. I picked up, you know, the laptop right now and brought it in there. I mean, everything, like, I just don't know, what to push, and it's not even haptic. So to start, you have the steering wheel, and in between the steering wheel, where remember the old, like a 458 or, you know, you have that start push button. Now it's just flat and it says start, and you just like wave your hand. Or it's just a little, it's a little, I'm not used to it. Like there's still creature. I don't want to say creature comforts. That's not the right word. There's still like, you have to push a bunch of things here. So to start this car, you have to push a button. Okay. Like, but the button, depresses like it, click, click, you know what I mean? That sort of sense. You don't get that with that one. Those little things, again, I'm detail crazy person. Those little things drive me nuts. I'd much prefer to push something that you can push. Having said that, it's still a $400,000 car or whatever. I'm sure it's awesome.
To jump back real quick, though, I am curious. So you had this love of cleaning stuff when you were a kid. How does that love of cleaning turn into your own company, Ammo, where, like I said, as we set this up, not only do you detail cars, you have your own line of car detailing equipment of materials. So how did that transition happen?
I'll make a very long story short. Basically, you know, I came out of some good schools, etc. And then when I left, I went and worked at a museum for cars and basically cleaned all the cars and prepared them and did all that. And
Can I ask which one?
Yeah, Cooper Classic Cars down in Manhattan, in Chelsea.
Oh, cool.
Technically. So I worked for them, which is like a museum / we rented out cars for movies and auctions and photo shoots and magazines and all these kind of things. So my job was to go on the shoot of a Ralph Lauren polo shoot or whatever, and I would bring the car and I would sit there like this and just basically fall asleep in the corner and make sure that the cars didn't have the models literally in stilettos or whatever walking on the hood of this $2 million car that I just drove there. So it was a dream job. It was awesome. And I got to do a bunch of cool things, but ended up meeting a business partner. Long story short, again, I left and bought a car wash in my town that I'd always loved as a kid or whatever. So I ended up using the money from the Wall Street job, et cetera, and buying the car wash and starting from there. And then from there, to answer your question, how I got into products, as a shop, you have what they call jobbers come over with a van and sell you 55-gallon drums, 5-gallon containers, et cetera. Sure. And one day somebody came in and I was already 5 years into my business and I had cars like this. I changed the business model. We can talk about that if you want to get super nerdy, but I was a business guy running a detailing business. So it was a little bit odd at that point, meaning I knew how to detail or I knew how to run a business because I went to school, you know, for all these things. So we were efficient and we had lots of Ferraris and things like that. When it came to products, I would buy the best and then polish and do all my, you know, it didn't look fantastic. A guy came in one day and said, "Hey, I have a new product line called ABC. It's not, let's just call it ABC for now. It's not like Meguiar's or Mother's or whatever. It's a random brand. I don't want to bring it up." So he comes in and I said, "Okay." He goes, I said, "Show me how to polish this with your polish." He's like, "I don't know." And he's like, "You're the, you know, Mr. Polisher guy. You're the, you know." And I was like, "Well, yeah, but I don't know your product. Show it to me." He didn't know how to do it. He ended up burning through the hood of a Mercedes. And I never forgot that. It was a silver Mercedes. So a few weeks later, the CEO of that company called and said, like, "Hey, would you do some consulting? We know how to make stuff, but we don't know how to. I was like the liaison in between the chemist and the end user. Like I was like, hey, this needs more lubrication. When you heat it up with X amount of, 3,000 RPM, whatever, it gets too hot and sticky. I'm making this up, whatever that was. Right. So we need more lubrication, more aeration, whatever. So I did that for a couple of years. The chemist ended up retiring, and the CEO of that company, I'm really fast forwarding like many years, said,
oh, that's fine.
We're going to go out of business. And I was like, I've been watching this guy for 5 years make stuff. And I've been sitting there making it like, nah, you know what? Let's make it a little bit more here. Okay, cool. At the end of the day, I was like, I can figure this out. And I was already kind of there. And I read, my wife's a PhD chemist. So I ended up, the long story again, is I started making the chemicals for that company. And then at one point I said, hey, I would prefer to make things a little bit better because I still have my business, my side business. Mm-hmm. I was doing this at night and I was detailing during the day because you can mix during the night. You just lights need to be on. And then during the day, the crew would come in.
Yeah, I'm exactly. Fascinated right now, by the way. I'm completely nerding out because of all the detailing work that I've done. So yeah, I mean, please continue. Please continue. Yeah.
So
and I'm going to buy stuff after the podcast.
Too, there you go. Appreciate that. So I started making what I thought was better products than what the formulas were doing, just because I wanted to add more of this. I was being a chef. You know, I wanted to make a little bit of my own je ne sais quoi. I wanted my own thing. So I did that and I made my own products, and I didn't have ammo at the time. I was just Larry detailing or whatever it was back then. And I said, hey man, this would be really cool if we put them in 16-ounce bottles instead of 330 gallon totes and 55 gallon drums for retail. And I remember the guy who was in charge at that point said, if you think you're going to compete with Meguiar's and Mother's and all these other, you know, the large companies, there's only a Turtle Wax, there's five, you know, Eagle One, there's five major mm-hmm. things. Not like today, we can talk about the transition from then till now. That's very interesting to me. But then there wasn't a lot. And he's like, you're not going to do that. And I was like, well, there's this thing called YouTube that's coming out. And he's like, oh,
and I was, you know, oh, so, what's that YouTube?
Yeah. So I said, hey, I think I'll just teach people how to do things. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I had no intention of selling product. I just wanted to make it for myself because I wanted the best of the best for my side business. And I was making it. It meant a lot to me. At that point, I had left. I changed my name and everything. And then a customer said something about the word ammo, meaning like, man, you have, when I detail a car, I put a lot of stuff around it just to make it convenient for me so I don't have to get up and down because I'm tall. So like it hurts my knees. And anyways, he said something along the lines of, man, you got all your ammo here or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's a cool name. And then I wanted to put it on the side of my bottle because I was just making like little plastic things for myself, mm-hmm. put it on the thing. And then people started wanting to buy it. And I was like, man, this would be cool if I sell enough so that I don't have to spend any money on my cost of goods sold, you know, my P&L, my cost of goods sold for all of my, I thought that would be like the best. Fast forward, you know, 12 years later, you know, we're in 73 countries, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a weird ride to say the least, but the bottom line is to answer your question there is I made the products because a lot of people say because there wasn't anything out there. You know what? That doesn't make any sense. There's tons of stuff out there, and all of it's mm-hmm. very, very good, and it's different. It's unique. It's like mm-hmm. saying there's no good food out there. Like, I don't know if I agree with that. I wanted to make it because I wanted to make it specific to me, and I didn't mm-hmm. have anything. No company at the time spoke to me, as corny as that sounds. It didn't like. You know, I wasn't taking like an old school hot rod to a show and then like hand polishing it and listening to doo-wop, which I think is awesome. I'm not like trying to be like down on it. I don't care, or low riders or this. I think anyone who's excited about a car, I'm excited about it. It just wasn't, I just didn't have anybody. I didn't have anything to look up to like, man, that is awesome. That is the Steve McQueen of detailing. That is the Jesse James of it didn't speak to me at that time. So I said, all right, fine. Like, what do I got to lose at this point? I'll make my own stuff and do my own thing. And then, like I said, 12 years later, now we are where we are. But that was more of the motivation. So I think I hear people say, well, there wasn't anything out there, so I made it the way that I want to. I think for me, it was somewhat true, maybe 20% true, but I would say 80% was I just didn't have any idols or I didn't have a jacket to put on that I felt proud of that company, if that makes sense.
So like it does.
When I see somebody wearing a shirt, like when you have it on your chest, I feel like that means like that's something like the Rangers or the New York Yankees. Obviously I'm a New Yorker, like that, that means you're part of the team. I didn't have a thing. I didn't have a tattoo I could put somewhere. So I was like, all right, I'll just make my own tattoo. There you go. There's the short story, or very long short story.
I mean, I love that you are an experienced detailer who then stepped in to just make your own products. You're exactly right. It's like different people have different ways of basically getting to the same conclusion, right? I mean, I knew a guy that wanted nothing to do with buffing wheels, polishing wheels. He would spend all his time with like clay bars, trying to get every little detail out. And it's like, well, I mean, what you're doing in like half a day, you know, I'll just come in, do a quick little wet sand, do a quick correction on it, and kind of be done with the same thing. I'm not talking about like Ferraris. I'm talking about like, my friend's SVT Contour. You know, it's not quite as easy, but it's like, you know, you're going to arrive at pretty much the same place, just different ways. I love the fact that you're a detailer that stepped into the product.
I think that's a big, it's not so unique now, but then I think it's different to be in a suit and focus on P&Ls and what's our quarterly earnings and what do we need to do to move more product and all these things that make sense as a business. I get it. But there's an interesting thing about detailing where I kind of don't like this word, but I'm going to use it because it just is ubiquitous or whatever. You know, there's this weird passion that comes in and there's very unique, fastidious type person who buys detailing products. And I think that translates through to the person making it. So my point is, if you're making a product and you're in a suit and you're not in the fight, to me, if you're not in the war, if you haven't been in the boxing ring, I'm not super interested in hearing all your thoughts on whatever that topic is. Like, if you're not a pilot and you haven't flown the plane and you read about it in a magazine and you're like, you've been on a plane once or twice, I'm probably not going to listen to you when you're telling me about how to fly a plane. You see what I'm saying? Like, that was the difference, I think, back then. But there's plenty of awesome detailers now that since the bar has been lowered in terms of, and I mean that in a good sense, meaning the bar for entering the business in terms of the chemical manufacturing, and there's 1,000 blenders out there. So the bar for entry, the fence to get in has been much lower. A lot of really amazing detailers have made their own stuff as well and gone through that. So it's more prevalent now. We can talk about the difference if you care of where it was then and where it is now. It's changed dramatically, but back in the, you know, mid 2000s when I started or whatever, those things were just missing. It was just corporation, big suit. How many hundreds of millions can we sell? And there wasn't any like, let's get down and dirty and make some mistakes kind of thing. And that was like, oh my gosh, like you don't want to do that. And then when YouTube came, the perfect storm happened and I took the wave there and people are like, whoa, this is cool. So that's how it kind of, somebody said that I respect in the industry and I won't say his name. He's been around forever. He goes, I think you were the last one, he told me a couple months ago. I think you, meaning Ammo, were the last one to kind of get in before the door closed, where it's just like, you know, there's 1,000 variations of it now. And, you know, I mean that in a nice way, but the last one, I was like the last of the old school, new school. It's hard to, and I was like, oh yeah, I never even thought about it that way. You know, Adams Polishes was another big one. Zymol, as opposed to the Mothers and Turtle Wax. And
I remember the Zymol. There was a guy that I used to know. I mean, he was like fanatical. It's like you can't use anything else, dude. Mm-hmm. Just relax. Yeah. You know, it's all about the cars. If we could, I mean, let's talk about your YouTube channel a little bit, because I love the fact there are a lot of detailers out there that are posting videos, and that's great. I mean, we've reported on some of them when it's interesting cleanups, but for the most part, it's, you know, here's the car, we set up the camera, time lapse, you know, suck out 20 years of grime on and fast food wrappers from the back seat that nobody cleaned up, and you know, it's a pretty miraculous transformation. But I love that your videos open with, you know, a story behind the scenes. We're going to look at the car, like the one with the Fiat, where the guy had like the deer head in the van, and you know, all the other kind of cool stuff with that. I love that aspect of your videos just as much as the cleaning procedure. Was that kind of the formula from the very beginning, or how did it evolve to that?
That is a great question. So I think YouTube has evolved from the beginning. So I will say that YouTube in the very, very beginning was about how do I fix my leaky toilet bowl or whatever? And I find the solution on YouTube. Now it's become an outlet for entertainment, right? So it's a completely different thing. So if I shoot a video on like the top 10 things that you need to know about polishing your paint, that it's like incredibly strategic and you understand specifically what's going on and it'll help you do something good, fix your paint, et cetera, it's not going to get any views. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that anymore. So I shot a video series called the ATA, meaning Ammo Training Academy 200 series. I spent 6 months developing it. I spent umpteen amount of money producing it in California, renting a place. Just leave it at that. It's just the most, and I was very excited and it was most meaningful to me. And it lost the most money on YouTube and I lost the most subscribers. Why? Because it was so in depth, we probably went past people's attention spans and things like that. And I get that. There's no ill will. I understand that now. My point is, years ago, we used it as an avenue for solving a problem. Now with the youth and the economy and COVID and all these other things where people are not, they're using that as entertainment. And that entertainment model has switched. So they want to see before and after in the fastest way possible. That was probably a year and a half ago. Now they want to see before and after. And YouTube only wants it to be as long as possible. Meaning I used to make 12-minute videos and now 16-minute videos. And now they're going to go 30-minute. Why? Because the algorithm mm-hmm. wants longer videos so that they can put more ads in it. Because you have to think about it. Every one of these videos, people think you're making like gazillions of dollars. You're absolutely not. Certainly not in my industry. If I was doing like Wall Street stuff or investments or whatever, there's money there because when you pay ads against it, you know, they're making more CPMs. Sure. Who's buying ads against detailing videos? So it is to some degree a labor of love. Is there money being made? Absolutely. But per video, it is like astronomically. I mean, if it takes me, you know, it takes me 3 or 4 days to detail a car and film it, another 2 or 3 days to edit it, and then one day to do a script and voiceover. I mean, do the math on the days. That's a mm-hmm. week. So yeah. It, from a financial perspective, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense anymore because the algorithm has changed so crazy. So a lot of YouTubers are going nuts. But to answer your question, I guess, yeah, it's what people want to see is the before and after. To me, it's almost like making a YouTube face, which like kills me, but I understand why people do it because it gets more clicks, right? Get more clicks, you make money. So I have no, don't hate the player, hate the game kind of thing. I get it, man. Make the YouTube, like make money. Like it's in a capitalist society. I get all that kind of thing. But I want to try to keep a story because I want to show my son when he's older, like, hey, this is a cool story and it's ubiquitous from 20 years from now or 50 years from now or 20 years past. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a fun story. It's a cool thing mm-hmm. as opposed to, hey, this is the flavor of the week. But I get that it is, it's going to change again. I don't know what it's going to be. If I did, I would try to get ahead of that. But things like the thumbnail picture, like that versus whatever, all yeah. these things I go can't stand into those. Factor. Yeah, it's, but at the but same it, time,
it's what I, yeah, it gets the attention. It gets the
right. I understand people got to make a living. So it's just YouTube has been a very fascinating roller coaster of this. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like every 5 seconds you're dying. You're like, wait, I don't. It's like it's its own job. Making products and detailing a car is 1,000 times easier than producing YouTube videos. I'm not even exaggerating for effect.
Nope. I'm there with you. I mean, just a few years ago when I was in another marketing life, marketing 1,000 horsepower wood chippers, the goal was like 10 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. That's it. We are not going any longer than 10 minutes on these videos because you're just going to lose the attention. And now, I mean, you're right. It's like, go ahead, go longer. The algorithm is doing better. So just
they push whatever. That video more. So you can have yeah. exactly, we do tests where we have exactly the same video content, the exact same time, the exact same thumbnail, because obviously everything's A/B tested, et cetera. We put both of those on with competitors and the competitor will get 2 million and mine will get 500,000. And you're like, it's the exact same thing. Why? Because now that competitor is locked into the YouTube algorithm and you like where I've been for 10 years or whatever. And now they're looking for the. So it's just whoever whatever, you know, hypothetical nerd is back there pushing a button. It's like, okay, now you're, you know what I mean? So that's
I mean, there's one person back there. We'll really mess him up today.
Well, it's not even that. It's like, who are we going to push? And so you have to be constantly on that. And so part of me goes like, you know what? I just want to make the videos that I want to make, which is based on stories and telling the, what I'm actually doing. So like, if I got to go look at a car, why would we not film it? So to find, in my opinion, which is easy enough to do at this point, but to find a dirty car and to clean it, I understand sometimes you got to do that to make it, you know, to pay the bills or whatever. I get that as well. So I'm sure we're going to do that as well. But at the same time, it's not like where my love and joy is. Mm-hmm. I like if it's a dirty car and it's got poo and vomit and all this other thing in there, but we're going to clean it and like someone's going to drive it and it's like a story and like I'm down. But to find one, you know, like, and you get where I'm going with that? That sometimes.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, yeah. It's, like, you know, Smith, you and I think we deal with this at Motor One from time to time, that the Google algorithm changes and it decides that something else is more important. And right. We kind of have to adapt to that. And it's not necessarily always the most fun thing.
Right.
But
so I'm thinking now I just do what I like.
And exactly.
If it gets picked up. If it doesn't,
that's what we try to do with this show as well. So keep, we just do what we like it. And we hope people like it.
Please keep doing it. More of the same. Let's talk about the Lamborghini video, because that was like, I mean, that did like 3.2 million views, right? That's nice, healthy viewership. And it's like, who finds a Lamborghini Countach in a barn? I mean, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is a surprise. Look at the, you know, I mean, you knew it was there, but I think just the story of somebody putting a Countach just, you know, in a garage for 20 years and just leaving it there, like no cover, nothing. I think that's just people, fascinating.
It's fascinating, but you have to understand there's some things, you know, I don't want to say journalistic integrity because I'm not a journalist and whatever, but there's also just integrity. So there's a lot more going on to certain stories that it's not like I'm keeping a secret from people, mm-hmm. but I do for sure. The respect of that gentleman.
Of course.
It makes sense that was left there because I would burn all my cars down if it meant I would be able to do some more things with my kids and my family and all the things that you guys would do as well. I just...
Yeah.
Don't think it's ethical for me to put that. It's not my story to tell, but if you can read between the lines, it was kind of, it's a bummer that was sitting there, but I probably would have kicked that and burned it down the street if I was in this situation as well. So he got to do what he felt was right and spend some more time with some people that he cared about. And, so I was this close to putting it in the video so that I was trying to shield him from all the knuckleheads leaving comments about why would you leave that in there? It's like, well, yeah, this guy freaking loved this car. Like he couldn't stop talking about it. He was actually crying when I left and I didn't want to film it, blah, blah, blah. All this kind of thing. Wow. Like, he's a good guy. He just had to focus on his family. And I was like, dude, totally got it. I'm here. And so I felt that I had to tell the story the best I could up to a point.
It's a great story.
I didn't want to say like, hey, this guy, you know, his XYZ family member did this and this, and, you know, he wanted to like stay with them for the next mm-hmm. X amount of years and take care of her. So there's a lot going on there, but you get where I'm going with that.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely. Totally. Definitely. Yeah. Great story. Well, I mean, tell us about, we're looking at it a little bit now. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the video, but I mean, tell our listeners just about what you went through to bring this Countach back to life. And I mean, it did come back to life.
Yeah, there is a lot going on there. It was out in Connecticut. A buddy of mine, Vinny Russo, who I've known forever with Matt, we've just, you know, been in the same clique. You know, what's weird is this YouTube thing, we all started together. Matt and Chris Harris and Mike Musto. And I mean,
Matt Farah, just to clarify
Yes, Matt Farah. You know, we went to high school together. All this, you know, this was like a thing that we just did before there was YouTube. So, anyways, Vinny is mutual friends of ours. He works for a company called The Curated down in Miami. And they found this car and said like, hey, you know, it's up in your neck of the woods. It was like 20 minutes from me or something. Can you come and, you know, film it and do all this stuff? And so that's where the, you know, the credit goes to them for sure for finding it. But in terms of, you know, restoring it, it's a challenging paint to do. It's, you know, a lot of these cars, specifically the older Lamborghinis, as I showed in the video, were painted in a barn. you know, they were just, that was kind of an afterthought. Like, let's make it nice and red and beautiful, but you know, that kind of thing. Like, it wasn't like it was today. So what that means as a detailer is you're getting, you know, like you're throwing the dice. I have no idea what I'm going to get from one panel to the next. So in that mindset, you can't just go like, okay, step one, we're going to do this. Step two, we're going to do this. And step three, we're going to do. It doesn't work that way. You have to like kind of open it up and be like, okay, what does this paint want? And the door could be totally different than the rear, which it was, by the way. There was just different panels on. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes these cars to me interesting, is it's not like, you know, like close my eyes and be like, okay, if I figure out one panel on this, it's just like everything else. I just put my headphones in, listen to some music or a podcast, and then do the labor. This one, this car is just constantly like, you know, it's boxing with you. You know, you got to like know what you're doing on everything, or that you're going to burn right through it. You burn through that paint, you're going to have some trouble. So, it was
for
a fun,
anyone who hasn't watched the
sure.
video real quick, what you're saying is that you go around with your paint gauge and you showed that the various panels, the level of the paint that's on them is different from panel to panel. And you point out in your video, usually that would mean, oh, this was resprayed or something like that. Mm-hmm. But no, this was it, you know, it came out of the factory in Italy and that's just how they did it. And so it, like you're saying, it's a much bigger challenge because panel to panel, you have to deal with something completely different.
Right, because it could be painted at different times. Because nowadays, if you look at cars that are painted, they're so razor close. Why? Because there's arms. It's all automated, and you're within like thousands of an inch. Totally makes sense based on the temperature outside, the temperature inside, if they had to refill the tanks of the paint or whatever. When you're talking about an older car or a body shop car, the reason it's drastically different is every human is different, and we're not machines. So like even, you know, I scratch my nose or I go take a sip of water, you're just going to lay down a little bit more, a little bit less paint in certain areas. Little areas are going to sag, like on vertical pieces, right? If you spray it, the paint is going to drip, right? Based on how he mixed it before. The point I'm making is there's 1,000 different variables, but if you get a brand new car, it is spot on because it's all computerized. So back then, obviously, they didn't have computers or whatever. Right. There's just an old Italian guy in a barn painting it. That's why they're all over the place. It's kind of funny.
So no, I'm glad you bring that up because, I mean, I don't know how many people listening out there have done paint correction or using, you know, a high-speed wheel. You can be going along just fine. And I mean, I did this especially early on when I was trying to learn. Fortunately, we had a used car dealership where it's like, you know, if you burn through the edge on this 15-year-old Suzuki that's currently flat red, not a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, the thickness of the paint, you're going along just fine, and all of a sudden, boop, the paint's just gone. It's extraordinarily, I guess I would describe it like this and see if you agree. It's pretty easy to just do a quick detail, but it's extraordinarily difficult, and it takes considerable experience to, for lack of a better term, not beep it up, right?
Yeah. So there's a difference. I mean, there's always the what is the definition of detailing kind of thing, but in that particular case, I call it preservation, meaning I'm doing everything I possibly can to keep as much paint as possible and make it pretty. And I think that subtlety is what detailers need to try to do when they're describing it to a customer, so they go like, oh, that makes sense. So I'm not detailing the car. I'm trying to preserve what's there and make it look as good as possible while not jeopardizing the integrity of the paint. That is a very subtle, hard, that's not step one, you do this, step two, you do that. Like, I have no idea. They go like, how long is it going to take? I'm like, ask the car. I have no idea. It's not one of these. Okay, fine. We can get within an hour or two and I can figure out in my mind, okay, this is going to cost this much because it'll be about this much time. When you're doing a car like that Lamborghini that we're talking about, that's just like, either you want me to do it or you don't. And when we're done, we'll do the math. I don't
know. Yeah, we'll figure it out afterwards.
Right. And 99% of the people are like, just do whatever you got to do because it's going to cost more for us to repaint it if you burn through an edge. So it's like going to like, lack of a better word, please, but like a, you know, the craziest plastic surgeon, and you're doing like a face. It's like, whatever you need, just leave, make it as nice as possible because I gotta walk around with this, you know what I mean? So I don't want to have to get it repainted, or I don't know what the rest of the analogy is there. So most of the customers are understanding that this isn't a cookie cut kind of thing on those cars.
Right. Well, I mean, the Lambo came out just fantastic.
Yeah, it came out great.
And one of the things that I haven't done detailing on any sort of professional level for a long time, but I used to love getting people's reactions when they would see something before and after. Are there any memorable reactions that you've had from customers where they were that they just like couldn't believe? It's like, you repainted the car. It's like, no, this is what you can do, right?
Yeah, I've had a bunch of those, obviously, you know, in 20 something years of doing it. But the irony is, the one that I remember the most is the one that didn't have a reaction. I was doing, it's a video as well,
I guess. Yeah.
A McLaren F1 GTR long tail. At the time it was 12 something million dollars. We had spent, I forget the hours, like 150 hours or whatever the math is. I can't remember. It's in a video, but it was an insane amount of time over 5 days a week to prepare for the quail, Pebble Beach quail, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And we were doing it in this guy's, helicopter hangar, and we disassembled the entire car. I'm talking like, take out the headlight, and it's like, oh, that's cool. And people, you know, just people going like, oh, that's not that big of a deal. And it's like, then disassemble the headlight. And they're like, well, that's whatever, but you know, that's not a really big deal. And I was like,
disassemble the headlight. Wow.
Then disassemble the headlight and remove the actual bulb and clean the bulb. And they're like, all right, that's pretty legit. So that's how defined we got with this. And then when we were done with it, I remember him walking in. I remember exactly where he walked in, and he's like, yeah, man, that looks awesome. It's pretty cool. I dig it. This is great. I mean, he wasn't a jerk or anything about it. He was like, this is great. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? Great. And so he's like, all right, well, let's do this. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, let's go for a ride. And I was like, you know what? I respect that. And then it opened up the door and it was like raining out. And I was like, well, it's raining. Let's just wait. He's like, no, let's go. So we ended up driving it. He's like, hey. But we ended up winning the quail and the whole thing. So we wiped it down. It was all good. But he's a good sport about it.
Hey, won in the end. You won in the end. I could feel you on that one. Yeah. I mean, it's raining. Do you know what we just did? Yeah. I would be that way at the used car dealership where it's like, okay, you know, especially, okay, here's a black F-150 that just came in from the auction. It had more swirls than you can imagine in the paint. I just spent 2 days. I can shave in the bed of this truck right now, put it out on the lot. And like a half hour later, a customer comes in. Oh, this thing looks really good. Can I take it for a test drive? Yeah, sure. And I'm just like, I'm sitting inside like, I know you're supposed to sell it, but not yet. You know, not yet. Let me look at it. Bruce, I've kind of been monopolizing the questions here. You've got to have some, man.
I do have some. Well, there's something I want to talk to Larry about. Because so, full disclosure, you were supposed to be on the show in April last month. And unfortunately, you were under the weather. But we're fairly certain why you were under the weather. And that was because you detailed a Cessna 401. And I want to talk about that video a little bit. And this was one that you did for a buddy of yours from Rescue Rebuilds. And you don't see a lot of plane detailing videos.
No. And
this has to be, well, let me ask you this. Is this the worst you've ever done? The worst in terms of condition inside that you've ever done?
Like disgusting kind of thing?
Yeah. Is this the most disgusting thing you've ever cleaned?
I'm going to say no, but close. I would say no, but close. I would say it's probably the second. But in terms of lasting impact, certainly on me, I would say this one was the biggest one. I don't think I'll be able to beat it. Cause I was quite ill for some time, enough to go to the hospital, that kind of thing. So, I wouldn't say I wouldn't do that again. I have to change up a lot of my PPE, my protection was not adequate because, quite frankly, I forgot it because it was a last minute thing, et cetera. Yes, I could have gone to Home Depot. I thought the mask was enough and it wasn't. I needed a full hazmat suit for sure. And I needed to have more clothes and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I got pretty ill. I'm not going to lie to you. I had to take, you know, I'm not a big antibiotic person or drug, you know, all that kind of thing, but I had to get on that. I had bronchitis. I think I still have a little bit of lingering stuff in my lungs. So I say this not to impress you, but to impress upon you that you got to take, you know,
oh yeah,
you got to be serious when you're cleaning stuff like that. So
Yeah, I mean, you get into something where, you know, animals have been living. I've seen a lot of videos, you know, from other people doing just regular car stuff, and they open them inside and they'll kind of make a joke out of it. Oh, look at the mouse home in the back scene. Wow, it sure smells funny in here. And it's like, that's dangerous. That's legit dangerous. Mm-hmm.
I think because it was enclosed, I tried to think back what caused me to have, I don't want to say I regret it because Jason's the man and I would do it again for sure. But I was sicker than I'd been in a long time, enough to go to the hospital twice. So,
well, we're glad you're okay. I mean, it full of droppings. With the video we're looking at right now,
nest, some sort of mystery, a bug nest. Yeah.
Yeah. Nests.
That's another bees. I had a bunch of people leave comments. Something. If I think hard enough, 50 people knew what it was. I was like, I don't know what this is. It looks like a bee, thing of mud, but it's a mud wasp or something like that.
Okay. I've heard of those.
Yeah. And so if you
see story the behind this was on, that the guy got, he was given the plane for free if he could get it running, and he got the Continental engines running, and then you came in and just did it.
He was going to do it himself. In full disclosure, he was going to do it himself, but he had broken his leg skiing. You know, he's more than capable of doing, you know, all this kind of stuff. He's a good dude. And he called me and showed me the whole thing, and I said, yeah, man, I'm down to help. But like he was legit in pain, like on camera, off camera. He was not, he shouldn't have been where he was on that film. He came to, you know, be on camera and help and do all that kind of stuff. But I off the record. Yeah. His doctor was like, you're not, he's supposed to be in bed. He was messed up, like legit messed up. His leg was like all whatever. So, God bless him. You know, he's a character for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, again, I mean, fantastic video. It's one of those jaw droppers where it's like that you're not going to get it. You're not going to get it.
Right. You look at it, you're like, you can't clean this. You might as well just get a can of gasoline and a match because this is unfixable.
Yeah.
And yet you get it done, man. Like, bravo.
It was definitely better. I think it would probably need another week of me not on camera and running around. To get that into a little bit more safe, but we did disinfect as much as we could. I think some panels needed to be removed, but I'm certainly not in a position to disassemble a plane. Mm-hmm. I can promise you that, from a, you know, FAA perspective, but, yeah, we made it a whole lot better. I do think, he's gonna have to replace a few things here and there, but, from what I understand, I think it's running now. I'm not sure, but, the goal is to get it up in the air, this year. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the most disgusting con?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. If this is number two, what's number one? Because
I'll preface this really quick just by saying to give you some perspective. I once took apart, it was a 1990, like one or two Jeep Cherokee that belonged to a doctor that only had like 40 some thousand. It was like ridiculously low miles. It was the doctor's dog vehicle. It's the only, he bought that specifically to carry his dogs around, you know, otherwise, you know, he's driving on in his Mercedes. So it spent 40,000 miles with big dogs in it. And I mean, we had to get it repainted because dog slobber had eaten through the paint on the outside. We had to replace some trim panels because dog slobber had melted plastic on the inside. What's the most aliens?
Like
it's just like several years of big dogs. And I mean, dog hair at that point basically wove itself into a floor mat. I mean, it not like into the floor mat, like it was its own floor mat, you know.
Right.
What's your worst? I know it's gotta be way worse than that.
No, it's different because this was like more real estate of bad things. The worst one I had was an isolated thing where we live near an airport and we're in a little swanky area or whatever. So there's a lot of private jets and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So my customers obviously have those jets or whatever. This was an A4 back when A4s were like, it was A4 convertible. It was like all the rage or whatever back then. Brand new. I think it had a couple hundred miles. They had just got it that week or month or whatever. And when you go on a private jet, that is yours, I guess you have to bring your own food. And because you want to stockpile it because you have guests coming or whatever. And sure, this woman got a bunch of food. And long story short, she left the crab legs in the car when, you know, on the plane ride or whatever, but the car is on the runway, you know, it's parked on the side or whatever. And it sat there for a week and a half or 2 weeks and it leaked in the back of the car. So, okay, whatever, not a big deal. She brings it in and she's like, I don't know what to do. It smells so bad. I'm like, no problem. I can get it. I actually have pictures of this as well still. And I put my hazmat suit on and a big mask because it stunk the whole shop up. So I had to do it outside a little bit just to get. And so I shampooed it. I did it or whatever. Still didn't work. Shampooed it, did it, whatever. Didn't work. You know, a couple of days, I'm like, man, like, we're up to like, you know, back then it was like $1,000 or whatever, which, you know, was nothing today. But $1,000, this is ridiculous. She's like, you got to keep going. So then I started to disassemble the rest of the car. And I was scrubbing the actual metal, like the frame of the car inside.
I've been there. Yep.
And disassembling all of it. Again, after a couple of days, I said, like, I can't do this anymore. This is getting ridiculous. The insurance guy came in and they totaled the car on the spot right there. And it had less than 1,000 miles. Wow. So to me, was worse because I couldn't. That was the first, I don't want to say failure, but. Like that's a patient I lost where this plane I felt like is disgusting, but to some degree I got it back to, I guess, somewhat safe. This one, we penetrated the metal, I guess. There's nothing left on the interior. We disassembled a brand new car. So to me, that still stands as the worst one ever. Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. I'm there with you. There was a vehicle that I did once that had just been, it must have been smoked in for like 10 years straight, yeah, like 10 packs a day. I mean, cigarettes and nicotine, it's just the absolute worst. I would rather do the dog vehicle, I think, or at least the carpet. You know, it's like you can yank the seats out, you can yank the carpet, power wash it, put it back in, okay, good. But trying to get like the nicotine smell out when it's, I mean, you've got to clean the seat belts, you've got to clean the seat belt mechanisms, it's in the headliner, it's behind the trim. Yeah. You know, it can get into like the padding behind headliner trim. Oh yeah. And trying to get all that, we would have a guy come in with one of those ozone machines. He's like, yeah, I can take care of this. And you know, he would run his ozone machine for like 3 or 4 hours and then, yeah, you know, go and then no. And the next day it's like, well, it kind of smells the same in here.
Yeah. An ozone machine, you say, huh? I got one right here.
I mean, it can work on some stuff. Reach.
I'm surrounded by cleaning stuff.
So I'm curious. So someone at home, they have, you know, a fun car that they drive on the weekends or, you know, when it's sunny or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they don't necessarily want to take it to the detailer. Maybe they don't consider it's that bad. You know, they just want to, you know, keep it shiny, keep it looking nice. Do you have any tips? Like, what do you do for just, you know, for kind of the simple upkeep kind of stuff?
Right.
Should you take it for a car wash? Should you do it just by hand? Give us your thoughts.
Yeah. So, I mean, right off the bat, I think people need to understand that anytime you touch a vehicle, anytime anything touches a vehicle, it needs to be lubricated, whether that's water, whether that's soap, whether that's spray wax or whatever. And I think that when I'm starting at the very beginning with people and just saying like lubrication is everything, your engine doesn't run without lubrication, etc. That's what causes a car to look not great. And I'm using we're talking 10,000 foot view here. So I say, as an example, this is just an example to get people to go, oh, I say in seminars and things, you know, what's the number one cause of damage to cars? And they go like, well, tree falling on it, car washing, this and then. And I go like, you know what? Actually, it's you people. It's us touching the car. I call it love marks because we love our car. We have to touch it. We have to wipe it. We have to do that every time you get it. You know, oh, look how smooth it is, that kind of thing. So this mentality of having to touch our cars all the time is actually what's causing most of the issues. And I think if people start to think about that, because in theory alone, if you bought a car, you cleaned it and it was absolutely perfect from the day that you got it and you never did anything to it, just let it, drove it and did everything and it's dirty and gross and junk. When I go in and clean it properly, likely it's going to be absolutely perfect underneath there. It's just not going to be any swirls. There's nothing ground, you know, nothing, you know, again, I'm saying in theory, and there's a million other things that could go wrong, et cetera. But conceptually, they go like, oh, and I go, yes, just the improper washing of your car is what causes it to have the issues. Then you have to pay someone like me to come in, correct those issues. And then basically it goes back. And they come back into the emergency room. It goes back. So I'm like, just skip that part. Eat your apples, exercise, metaphorically speaking, you know, eat healthy, do all those things, and you won't have to go into the emergency room all the time. So that's where I start off with people. The second thing is, I would say regular maintenance is better than just kind of like hardcore. How do I say this? Like going to the gym on a regular basis is better than going once a month and working out for 10 hours. Mm-hmm. You see the subtlety of, mm-hmm. of what I'm saying. So this, you know, once every week, or once every 2 weeks, or once a month, or whatever it is, because I know people are busy. I think doing it yourself is going to be much, much better, or paying someone who's understands these concepts. I think you'll be in good shape. So you said bringing it to a car wash, meaning a mechanical car wash. I can't speak to every single one of them, but in general, not every single one of them, but in general, you have to think about when you're in a car wash line, you're sitting in line and you're waiting to go in. Usually what's behind you is something different than your car. So let's say you're driving this $400,000 Ferrari. No problem. In front of you is probably a dump truck, and behind you is a Honda Civic or something, right? Where you just did the plethora, the wide range of cars.
Of course.
When that truck goes through the car wash, they have to have enough cleaning power to clean this dumb truck off in this random fictitious example. When you go, okay, the truck goes through, it's shiny, it looks amazing, it looks great, right? The chemicals are doing their work because you're not really agitating it, you know, in this normal car wash. Maybe there's some car washes that have people there, but normal one, you get, you know, the traditional, you get where I'm
going. Of course.
Mm-hmm. Then the Ferrari goes in. Okay, great. Now the Ferrari goes in. There's nobody really back there going like, let's dial back the acidity of this. Let's dial up this and let's change. No, this again, I'm being kind of silly here. There's, you know, a 17-year-old. Yeah, they're sitting there playing on their phone, chewing gum. She's not sitting there, you know, she's waiting for you to pay and get out.
Yeah, of course.
So the point I'm saying is it is a one size fits all, and you have to make that one size for the largest person walking in, for the dirtiest car walking in. And usually that's done with chemicals because you're not really getting in there and washing it properly. You're slapping it with those plastic pieces. So in most cases, I would say you're doing more harm than good, but there are now amazing car washes that are touchless. But when you get into the touchless sort of area, my light just died. When you get into the touchless sort of scenario, you're now increasing the chemical aspect of it more than the physical touching. So it's they're not equal, and then one is just not touching, and one they're not equal. Yeah. The chemicals are stronger because you're not agitating mechanically. So they go like, oh my God, that's probably too deep and too nerdy. Bottom line.
No, it's not at all. I've never thought about it like that. And that is a fascinating perspective. And it's good that you're an expert, because like I said, I'd never thought about it like that. But that's a very, very good point.
Right. Find somebody who does a hand wash proper and pay a little bit more, or get out and use it as a therapeutic moment, because I do think cleaning your car is therapeutic. Like, I've had a very long day, and I've had actually a pretty awful day with all these manufacturing issues and waiting for things. It's just been ugh. So I'll go home tonight at my house and I'll wash my car, which people think I'm crazy. I'm the car wash guy. I have to. No, I do that to just like, I just need to like, everybody's got to leave me alone. I just need to chill for a second and like rethink what was going on. And then I'll be back in my mode. So like my family kind of knows that. So I'm saying, hey, use it as a therapeutic thing. And the byproduct is you get a car that's nice and clean. Cool. Your neighbors look awesome. You drive your hot car. Okay, great. But the other thing is, what's the second most expensive thing that you purchase in your life? Is probably a car, if I had to bet something, versus your house, right? So you clean your house, I hope. If you don't think, certainly nowadays, if you don't think that maintaining your car or the value of your car isn't going to come back to you, you're out of your mind. Today's market is a random example. Probably the best example in
today's market is crazy.
Years. Right, but exactly. Yeah. So like, you get my point regardless.
Yeah,
I just think that regular maintenance should be done. And I respect people that are like, I don't have the time, I don't really care, but at least pay the right person to do it.
Sure.
And try to stay away from those, be cognizant of what happens when you go through a tunnel wash. That's all.
Nope, it makes a big difference. And I remember back in dealership days, I knew guys that would buy just some of the nastiest looking cars they could find at the auction. All they would do is take them home, give them a good cleanup, a good detail, take them back to the auction and resell it again. And it's like, oh, well, this car was here last week. No, it wasn't. This is a different car. And they're paying a lot more for it.
I absolutely 100% respect that guy. Totally makes sense. That's my kind of guy. Like, every car has this amazing potential. And so I love looking at the ones that are super dirty and being like, I can make that thing sing in probably a day, and the value would be crazy. So like, that's, I get excited about those videos. So that's my mission.
Is there one that you remember that even surprised yourself where it's like, I think I can make this look really good. And then when you were done, you're like, damn, I did not expect this. Is there one?
Yeah. Wait, hold on real quick, Smith, because I want to give Larry some free promotion here. He has actually been doing that on his channel. He took an Acura RRL or an RLX and then this Audi GT and has done exactly that, where he bought these cars, cleaned them up, and then sold them for a profit. So if you want to check out those videos on his YouTube channel, you can.
Right now, I have an 82 Trans Am that I bought for pretty cheap because it was not in good shape at all. I'm like, I just need to get rid of it. And I cleaned it up and it's sitting outside. It is unreal. It looks amazing. It's the, the Knight Rider car, that kind of thing, Trans Am. And I already sold it for more than double what I paid for it. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. I've done that a few times over the years. I've done that a few times. I had a Geo. Well, it was a Chevy Metro. It was late enough to be a Chevy Metro. The only thing I did was replace the exhaust on it, and then just detailed the hell out of it. And I drove it for a few months because that was like back when gas was $4 a gallon for the first time. Mm. It paid. I was driving back and forth from Ann Arbor to Dearborn. It paid for itself within like a couple months. Prices started to come down a little bit. Put it up, sold it, and made about $1,000, I think, on the turnaround. So
But I interrupted your question. Just clean
is the way to go, folks. The one that surprised you the most, I want to hear this story because I've had a few over the years and it's such a great feeling afterwards.
Yeah, I can't think of one other than that 82 that's outside, because that was pretty bad. That paint had single stage paint. The guy left a bunch of boxes and stuff on it. It's on my Instagram page right now, probably,
I am literally pulling it up as you speak.
So there's boxes and junk on it. So the paint was pretty scratched up. And then when you polish, as you know, single stage paint, that's the best paint to polish as far as I'm concerned. It's just, I got all the time in the room and I can maneuver and manipulate that thing. You can see the difference.
Anyone watching on YouTube right now, you can see left is original and right is after Larry has done his fantastic work.
Yeah. So we did that to the rest of the car and then I put some skin on there and I did all my fancy schmancy things to make it, pop afterwards. But yeah, that, I'm not even sure there's a filter on there. It might be a filter on, but in real life, it looked a whole lot more drastic than that. But
boy, that is a Knight Rider Trans Am too. I mean, you've got the right color, you got the right seats, the right color in there.
Yep. That's pretty cool.
I used to work with a guy that actually did a lot of the Knight Rider conversions.
He had the original.
Wow.
That is. See the box? See the square on the hood?
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah.
That's where the box was?
Yeah. And if you scroll down to a bunch earlier, it's not relevant, but you could see in the guy's house, a couple more down, in his garage. There it is back there on the bottom left. There's boxes and junk.
The boxes stacked on it.
So, that's going to turn some heads. And so it already sold to a guy who has a collection of these things.
Good.
And he's a police officer. He's like bouncing off the walls. He's very excited. But I wanted to remove the mold and definitely get the car polished up. And I think his reaction is going to say a lot when he comes on Saturday to pick it up.
Awesome.
I would love to be impressed.
I would love to see and hear how that goes. Is there a specific condition of a vehicle? Like earlier, I was talking about the dog hair. I grew to just absolutely hate cars that had pets in them a lot because it's such a pain to try to get all of the dog hair out. Is there a certain condition that just kind of grates you more than any other when it comes to detailing?
Yeah, I would say number one would be smoke. I don't drink alcohol, not for any other reason that I don't like it. It just doesn't taste very good to me, but alcohol, and I certainly don't smoke or do drugs or any of that kind of thing. So smoke from an annoyance, because I don't like being around people who smoke. I certainly don't like to be around cars that smell like that. I don't like it. I'm like allergic to it. I don't like the smell. But it is a complete nightmare to clean properly, as you mentioned earlier. So there's no winning on those cars. So I actually don't accept them anymore at this stage of my career. I'm able to say, hey, if the smoke smell, I'm just not the right guy. Life's short. I don't want to deal with this. Why? Because you're dealing with perspective. You're dealing with someone's opinion. Like when I clean that car that you just showed there, like kind of hard to argue with me that one side is dirty and one side is clean, right? It's like, sure. You can look at it. When you get into a car, that smells bad. It's like, well, I don't think it smells bad. They're like, well, I think it smells bad. I'm like, well, I don't know how to fight that. How do I compete with that? It's not, mm-hmm. There's no, it's opinion based. There's another word I'm looking for, but.
Subjective?
Subjective is the word. Thank you. It's a subjective thing. You cannot, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Yes, it is subjective to say, is this shiny? Is this not shiny? But like, are you really going to argue with me on that one? Like,
yeah, it's hard. It's hard to please somebody when you are in just a completely different universe as to, you know, what they're experiencing. Never mind,
right.
you know what might actually be. No, I'm with you on that. And for anybody listening who might be trying to quit smoking, find a vehicle. If you know anybody that has a work vehicle that smokes. We used to clean a lot of work vans, you know, ex-cargo vans, when I was working at this dealership. And when you'd get in one that was smoked in, like you got the van on the inside and the back, spray it with a little bit of soap, and all of a sudden that white just turns this sickly brown.
Yellow, brown.
From the nicotine. And it's like, if you ever need a reason to not smoke, it's like, that's what's going in your freaking lungs. And I'm so with you. That's the dog hair and smoke. I got pretty good over the years of being able to get smoke smell, you know, pretty well out of cars.
I can make it like much, much better, but I've been in so many situations where I'm like, just it's for free now. Just now it's 100% for free. Please, I cannot spend any more time on this because they're talking about, hey, when I turn my air conditioner on, when I turn my vent on, I'm like, do you want me to disassemble your car to take the vents out? I can't clean that. I don't know. I can spray fog and things in there, but it's going to mask it. It's going to kill it to some mm-hmm. degree. But it's subjective. Thank you, Chris. It's subjective. I can't argue. It's better, isn't it? Well, it's better, but I thought for X amount of dollars, it was going to be 100%. You know what I mean? You go back and forth, and I go like, I have like 25 of these sitting outside right now. You know what I mean? Like you're in that business mode. Like, okay, no more.
I would rather clean the backseat of an Uber on January 2nd than go back into like one.
Well,
of those
that's true. You have a stain. You remove the stain.
It's done.
So before it's done, like you're going like this with smoke.
It's done. Like, unless somebody
grab it.
Unless somebody puked into the vents, which okay, that'll be a whole nother mess. But
right. But yeah, I get your point. So yeah, I would say smoke is my number one nemesis. So much so that I just say, hey, it's not for me.
So anyway. I want to ask you one last question, and then we'll shut things down for tonight because I want you to go home and clean your car and be with your family. But you. So kind of going back a few questions ago, you were talking about how it's better to spend the extra amount of money to have someone detail your car, to have someone professional clean it. If you're not going to do it yourself, you're busy, whatever. What would your recommendation be to find a good person to do that? Because obviously not everyone lives in your area and they can't go to NYC and have AMMO NYC and have you take care of their car. So someone, Smith is in South Dakota. How does he know someone is good to detail his car?
Right. So it's pretty much like anything else. One, you're going to look at recommendations, et cetera, and Yelp and all this other stuff. But to me, I think you have to walk in. Just like any other business thing, any chiropractor, any doctor, any dentist, et cetera, or just cut your lawn. I want to look at you face to face and I want to have a conversation and see if you are legit. So that I do that with anything. That's just not detailing. That's just like life or whatever. Even
the
lady who cuts my hair, et cetera, making an example. The next thing you want to do is when I go into the shop, I don't necessarily want to be like, hey, is this shop like a crazy zillion-dollar thing? Or no, I'm not necessarily looking for that, but does it need to be clean and functional and all that kind of stuff? Yes. The third thing is, are there cars in the parking lot? What type of cars are in the parking lot? Does this guy seem to understand what you're looking for, or is it more of a cookie cutter type thing, which makes sense? You know, package one, package two, package three, you know, there's different, it's sort of like restaurants. There's different restaurants. There's not one that's right or wrong. I want to be very clear on that. I'm not like judging anyone. I don't necessarily care. Whatever works. But McDonald's makes a whole lot more money than your local steak shop. I can assure you that. But when you go to the steak shop, you're going to pay a whole lot more and you're going to get an amazing steak. But I'd probably rather own a McDonald's is my point. I'm saying, but which one would I want to go in to have dinner with my family? I'm going to the steak shop, if you get my drift. So
totally.
There's different tiers of detailing that I think people need to understand. It's not, you're not just going to eat food, the general word of food. When you eat food, you eat different, there's a million different things, same kind of concept with detailing. So that third thing, when you walk in, just know where you're going and understand the pricing. And subconsciously, this is probably wrong, but this is a great marketing thing, is when I look at it and I see that if it's like the cheapest place in the world, you know, and it's definitely a subconscious thing where your brain goes, why is this so cheap? Right? But the people that I talk to and try to train and all that kind of stuff, professional detail, when I first started, I looked at the plethora of people that were doing detailing in my area. I went and I looked at them and I said, what are they doing? And that was in my business mode in the early 20s. Mm-hmm. And then I said, if you start chasing the price, meaning discount junkies and things like that, you typically have to cut corners on a bunch of stuff to make any profit. So instead, charge 20% more than the highest guy in your area and be the best of the best and show that. And I think subconsciously customers come in and go like, oh, wow, this guy's really expensive. He's got to be good. Let me see all the things. Is the shop good? Is the place good? Is Yelp? All the things have to back up. I'm not saying he's terrible and he's charging more. Of course not. All the things have to be in alignment. But that sort of feeling when you walk in is a feeling that you can't really do unless you walk in. So the bottom line is, if you're really into it, take 5 minutes and walk in and have a conversation, shake hands, be like, hey, I would like to do this weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, quarter, whatever fits that person's schedule. But talk to them, look at where it's going to be. Is the person dressed appropriately? Are they clean? Are they, that's part of the training thing I'm talking about in my next academy that I'm trying to do, is like, you have to be clean if you're going to be cleaning someone's car.
Presentation matters, not only presentation, you personally, but also the vehicle.
Are you carrying yourself? Are you clean? Yeah. Are you not smelly? Are you, you know, we work in smelly things, so that's not like an offensive thing to say. Like, I'm smelly because I get in the car. I have a shower upstairs because I don't want to take it home. I'm not saying everyone, you get my point, like,
totally.
Present yourself a certain way. So as a customer, you come in and you're comfortable. Same thing. I think compare them to someone who cuts your hair. I think because they're so physically close to you, like, I don't want to be around, like, this person's clean and like understand, you know, like you can tell they have a history and they know what they're doing. I like that comparison for some reason, because haircut people are, I think, are just as weird as detail people. There's, you know what I mean? They have like their own culture and their own like thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of compare.
You're not
them.
Wrong.
You know what I mean? There's like the subculture of
haircut. You are not wrong. Totally. There's such a subculture in detailing. Like I was saying earlier, I've taught, just been around so many people over the years. They have their way of doing it. They have, this guy has his way of doing it. It's a total culture, but we're super stoked that you were here with us today to talk about some of your experiences, which are some of, for me being a former detailer. And I don't do it professionally, but a couple of weeks ago, Mustang came out after primarily being stored for the winter. So, you know, busted out the wheel, just, you know, did a quick single stage on the outside, got it looking nice and pretty. Oh, here's a question I'll ask you really quick before we go. You wash the car. Do you use one of those wiper squeegee things to get the water off? B, do you use a chamois? C, do you use a towel? Or D, do you use the special water that doesn't spot up and just let it dry naturally?
Well, I can tell you right now, A and B are absolutely no, 100,000% no. You're not using a squeegee. You're not using a chamois. Chamois, I call them the rigor mortis towels because they're stuck like this forever. So you don't use that. Those people are not washing them on a regular basis, nor do they have any fibers that collect things, which we'll talk about in a second. B is, yes, I use a towel, but you're using a microfiber towel. So you're using a microfiber towel to wash. And you're using a microfiber towel to dry as well. Most people think that you use a wash mitt. The reason I'm not promoting wash mitts anymore as I have in the past is microfiber is designed to pick up and hold things. We all know that it's a wonderful thing. It's probably the biggest revolution since clay in the detailing industry. If you had to be left on an island with, would I take a machine, a polisher, or this, and polish and wax? No, I would take microfiber towel, and I'd probably take a clay bar, that kind of thing. That's how powerful those tools are. So, I dry with a microfiber towel that's damp, because if you take a dry microfiber towel and try to dry a car with it, it doesn't like to absorb water. So you have to make it damp, and then all of a sudden it will absorb water. Kind of fascinating. So what happens is people don't understand when you're washing your car, you can be the greatest detailer in the world or whatever. You wash your car. I'm telling you, by the time you start the car to when you finish, you're doing two things. You're missing some spots. If you notice, there's usually on like the side of the car where you're going sideways and then you go down, there's always that triangle right there. You always miss a spot, right? Somewhere. And by the time you go from the front to the back, that by that time there's dust, there's things going on. It could be taking a phone call or whatever. It's just natural to have a little bit of stuff left on the car. So what happens is people take these squeegees and they take the blade thing. And now you have these little particles that you've forgotten, you've missed, you're a human being, et cetera. It's never, ever, ever perfect. And now you're taking that little rock, which basically it is, it's pebble, and it's just ground down to sand, to dust, et cetera. And you are dragging it across. Now, when you're dragging it across, you're just rolling it across the paint. You're not picking it up, carrying it, and moving it. So those just, I found over the years, are just not the right thing. Are they faster? Are they more efficient at moving water? Not a problem, but I'm not interested in efficiency. I'm interested in safety. So we've developed the microfiber towels the right way, get it wet, and then you use a lubricant. In this case, I developed a product called Hydrate. We haven't talked anything about my product, so I'm very I'm not anti-sales, but I'm not here to sell any product. If they do, I'm very grateful, but very proud of Hydrate. That is a drying lubricant that we found. I'm saying to myself, I'm using 15 buckets on this car. I'm exaggerating. I got everything. It's the greatest thing in the world. And everybody has 2 buckets, 3 buckets, 10 buckets. We're now down. I've now moved it to 1 bucket, but I've done everything I can to make it safe. And I'm still scratching the paint. There it is, Hydrate. That's the new pro version. But what's going on here? And we found out that it's the drying phase that was actually causing the damage, because people spend so much time washing their car and getting lubrication, using multiple buckets, dunking their wash bin into the other one and cleaning the other one, which is great. It's wonderful. And then they wash the car, it's perfect, but they're still getting scratches, but they don't realize the scratches aren't coming necessarily from that. I still think they are to some degree. It was from the drying with that blade. So that's where the microfiber came in years ago. And then when you unfortunately hit that little square or triangle that I was talking about, or a little bit of dust, the microfiber towel is gonna pick that up. You're gonna wring it out, all the water comes out and the junk comes out. And if it gets a little bit dirty, you put it to the side and you grab another one. I mean, it's as simple. So the more towels that you use, the less chance you have of scratching your car. So that's what I like about that, where the chamois typically goes in that plastic tube, sits on your shelf until the next time you pull it off and you dry your car. That thing, from when you bought it to when you're using it, it's very hard to argue with me that the color hasn't changed to a darker color, which means it's dirty. And you're not necessarily throwing that in the washing machine. Maybe you are, but 99% of normal people stick it in the squeegee thing, put the top on there, and you don't do it again. So I'm kind of anti doing that. And I only really use compressed air, or the other thing, which the air is great. I only really use that at the end, meaning when most, if not all, of the moisture is removed safely and you're leaving behind protection and all that Hydrate, characteristics. I'll go into the seams, into the areas that you just can't get your hand into, the towel into, and I'll use compressed air to blow it out. But I don't necessarily use compressed air to blow the entire car for two reasons. One, it takes forever. Two, it's incredibly loud. And I guess there's a third one. Occasionally, if your floor or your driveway isn't immaculate, because I know everybody out there, before they wash their car, they blow their driveway down. Nobody's doing that. So when they hit it, it eventually hits the ground and ends up blowing up dust everywhere. So I always find that kind of funny. So I'm not saying not to use that. I'm just saying use that sparingly in the tight areas to blow out the stuff that you fit, like no finger can get into the seams. Totally logical. But to sit there and do the whole car, to me, I don't have 30 minutes to do that. And it's not super beneficial in my mind when you can do this much faster, safer. And it's not picking anything up. The blower is not picking any dirt up. So See, that's what happens when you ask me a question right before we leave. I can give you a 20 minute answer.
No, I'm glad I asked, because I'm doing it right. Yes.
Yes. Well, good. Good.
Larry, people can find you. Ammo NYC is your website, ammonyc.com. You're at Ammo NYC on Instagram, Ammo NYC on YouTube. Is there anything TikTok. Else that you would like to promote? Anything like that before we say goodbye to you tonight?
Instagram is great. Visit the website if you want to. There's a ton of free information on there. I'd be super grateful if you bought anything, but you can come and snoop around. You can ask me questions. I'll happily respond and email and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm around to help. I'm not going anywhere. So yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on.
No, awesome. No, we appreciate you
coming on, man.
And of course, I mean, we'll have links available in the YouTube description. We'll have links in our article that goes up every Friday at MotorOne.com that tells kind of the overview of what we talk about here on the podcast. Of course, the podcast airs every Friday. Go to Moto One Podcast on YouTube. We're available on just about every audio platform you can imagine out there, mm-hmm. Spotify, Google. And on YouTube, like I said at the beginning, we're at 298 subscribers. So next week, in theory, if we're at 300, Bruce and I are going to have to do something.
We'll definitely be at, we'll look at the analytics. We'll be at 300.
We'll have to do something silly to celebrate. Sure. But if we're at 400 subscribers next week, if we're at 400 subscribers next week, we'll drink some jalapeno sauce. How's that?
Sure. Yeah. But
there you go.
Let Larry go home and enjoy his family because he deserves it.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to help.
Yeah, man. And talk to you later. And thanks for being with us. So
you got it, guys. Be well. Bye-bye.